Josh, I'm an old school guy, you're a new school guy, but I bet you and I would agree on some of the great voices of college football in our time. Who would you say is the most iconic voice of college football in your lifetime?
That is a great one. I would say maybe, even though I'm not a huge fan, Kirk Herbstreit comes to mind. I don't know. I'll throw that out there.
Anything older school?
Ooh, you're dating me here, Ron. I'm going to lean on you for that.
Well, I don't know what school you went to, young man, but I'm going to tell you right now that I'm going to introduce you as Josh Applebaum, a 5'5", 120-pound linebacker, but oh, what a scrapper. If you know what I'm talking about, Keith Jackson here, and all of a sudden, as we're going to be talking about betting on college football, it's not something I'm akin to, but oh, there's a fumble! He really is Josh Applebaum. I am a horrible impersonator named Ron Flatter. You know, you're not a Keith Jackson guy? Are you too young for Keith Jackson?
You know, you started saying that, Ron, and something came to mind. I know I've come across it here and there, but I think that impression was spot on. Although the height and weight a little off, but I'll take one and I'll skip the other.
I was actually dared one time when I was broadcasting high school football, 40 years ago in Chico, California. And the guy who we work with in Las Vegas, John Katsalamidis, who writes for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, he went to my high school. We went to the same high school in Chico, California. And he dared me, in reference to somebody once, he says, I dare you to say his height and weight and say, oh, what a scrapper, on a broadcast. And he was this little guy, and he made a play, and I did it. I don't know if I want a steak dinner or a beer or what, but, you know, that was John Katsalamidis dared me to do that. And all these years later, we're working in the same town. I've gone way off topic here, except for the fact we're talking football. And specifically, we're talking what Keith Jackson was so iconic at calling was college football. And when you talk about the NFL being the most popular sport in America to bet, Josh, college football is not far behind.
You're exactly right, Ron. Yeah, if you consider the NFL the king of sports betting, I guess we could say college football is maybe the prince or the next in line to the throne. But today we're going to talk a lot of tips, how to attack college football, spread systems, total systems. We'll talk about why bowl game season and all these playoff games just get massive betting, and there's a lot of good systems you can lean on, especially going contrarian, you know, betting against the public in these really heavily bet spots. But we always want to set the stage, just, you know, letting our VSiN listeners know that obviously it's a heavily bet sport, and we always want to have a point of reference, a strategy, and a number in our head that we're going to try to strive for. So as we've mentioned in other spread sports, you know, the spread and the total, betting on the over-under, those are your most popular bet types in college football. So what does that mean, Ron? 52.38%. That's the number in the back of our head, knowing that we got to pay the juice, betting the spread and betting the total. Standard minus 110 juice, that means you got to win 52.38% of your bets. So as we talk about college football today, remember, your goal is to win 53% of your plays or more. Anything above that, you're doing very well overall.
Well, let's just try and win one at a time. We'll take them one game at a time, right? And God forbid you should be parlaying, but, you know, we've offered that lesson and beaten that into your head on other episodes. If this is your first time with us, maybe we'll beat you in the head over it as well. But because of college football's mere size, there are so many more possibilities for winning games, but there are so many more pitfalls in terms of possibly losing them, because as coaches will often tell you, their entire careers are based on guys who are 18, 19, 20, 21 years old.
Yeah, and that's key, Ron, because obviously we're betting on kids. We're not betting on professional athletes. You know, a lot of these kids probably will make it to the pros, but when you think about it, a lot of them will not. So the key here is just in terms of the league overall. You know, the NFL, we're talking 32 teams. They play every Sunday. You'll have your Sunday night, your Thursday night. But college football, we're looking at around 130 college football teams. So what does that mean? It means more opportunities, which is fantastic. It also means that you have to tread a little bit lightly because, you know, on an average Saturday, you can be looking at, you know, 50, 60 or more games. And if you get into the situation of betting too many games, that could be a pitfall. So we always want to make sure that, you know, we're staying disciplined, but we're also want to be conscious of the fact that we want to treat these games differently. It's not like the NFL where, You know, you have your 32 teams and you bet on them every Sunday. There are different size schools. There are different conferences. There are small school games. There are big school games. And as a result, we want to basically not treat every game equally. We want to know that, okay, in these heavily bet games where Ohio State is playing Michigan, it's going to, you know, be on national television, going to get a ridiculous amount of bets and public action. Okay, we can lean a little bit more on betting against the public and going contrarian. But on the flip side, you have your small school games. You have your, you know, your Northern Iowa against whoever it may be. And that's going to be a low bet game. So as a result, you know, line movement is a little more important in those situations. So just remember, not all games are created equally. You want to attack them differently. You want to have a little bit of a different strategy, whether it's a heavily bet game or a low bet game.
And the 130 or so teams we're talking about, of course, are the FBS teams, the football bowl subdivision. There are FCS teams that come into play, the football championship subdivision. That was what we used to call Division I AA and below. Those teams, yeah, you can bet on them, and sometimes you can't, and it depends on where you are, and often those games aren't posted until maybe the day before they're actually played. So the 130 that we're talking about, the big kahunas, you know, the big hussas, as Keith Jackson might have said, they're the ones that our conversation will be about, and that's probably where you're going to be spending your betting dollars to begin with. So let me jump back in and something that you had mentioned just a moment ago, and I want to seize on this before we expand in terms of scheduling and when you bet, etc. And that's how you alter your approach between betting not just from the NFL to college games, Josh, but when you're betting on small schools versus big schools, or big schools versus big, small versus small, however they may mix, you have to attack these games in different ways.
You exactly do, Ron, and I think this is kind of the point overall. You know, you're going to look at your live odds page on, you know, a Saturday, and you're going to see so many different games across the board, but you have to basically approach them differently. So kind of what I always look at is, you know, you're going to make, you want to know that, you know, going into any Saturday, the public is going to flock to teams they can recognize, schools that they are familiar with, and ranked teams as well. Rankings play a huge role here. So obviously, in these heavily bet games, and it's pretty simple, if you can recognize the school name, those are going to be the games that a lot of recreational bettors will flock to. Your Alabamas, your Clemsons, your Ohio States, your Michigan, schools like that overall. But in those games, you know that, okay, the ticket counts are going to be high, and who's the public going to lean on? A lot of favorites, a lot of home teams, betting totals, they're going to bet on a lot of overs. So in those situations where you can attack heavily bet popular games, you know that, okay, if they're televised as well on ESPN, NBC, ABC, if it's a primetime game, those are the situations where betting against the public, getting better numbers, looking for shaded lines can really be to your benefit. But if you look at all those small school games, they're not televised, the public really doesn't care about them, there's really no public to bet against. You can kind of throw contrarian out the window. Okay. And that's when looking at line movement is really important, because pros will bet on any game. They don't care if it's on TV or not. If they have a, you know, if they've set their power ratings, they see value, they'll get down on those games. And that's why looking at those small games where you see, you know, a line move toward Appalachian State, okay, that's most likely a sharp play coming in. And that's when you really want to ideally get on those numbers early before they move. And if you're too late to the party, you might as well not buy into a bad line at that point.
And that's an important thing, by the way, that you mentioned. You can talk about the biggest game that's the most telecast game that'll get the biggest TV rating, but the profit might be elsewhere in a game that's barely on a screen anywhere, even if you're streaming. So there's that. And also the fact, and this one's interesting, as we were going over our common notes for this podcast, the games that are played on Thursdays and Fridays, interesting that you're going to have maybe a little more action on those than you might on a game that is a bigger, higher profile game amidst all of the games on Saturday. Why is that, Josh?
Yeah, I think that's important because throughout the week, you know, once you get into football season, bettors are just thirsty, can't wait to get to that Saturday. But you will have these Thursday games, these Friday games. Later in the season, you'll start to get games on Tuesdays, Wednesdays. So these games that otherwise, if they were kind of sandwiched or hidden on a huge Saturday, may not get a lot of bets. But because they're televised, because it's a Thursday or Friday night, people want action. We're getting close to the weekend. They're going to be much more heavily bet than usual. So that's when a lot of biases come into play. So those situations are also spots where you can bet against the public. If you see heavy public betting on one side, You know that kind of going the other way, you could place yourself on the side of the house. If you can get better numbers, that's also key. But again, knowing that each game, and kind of to wrap it all up, take each game individually. Don't think of it as an NFL Sunday where kind of all the games are pretty much equal. College, there's a lot of discrepancies in terms of how popular these games are, the timing of these games. So make sure you're doing your research going into it and you kind of know where each one stands.
Let's talk about the ways that you can bet college football. And I'm going to offer a quick primer for the uninitiated. So if you know this already, you're going to go, okay, yeah, we know. But in case this is your first time jumping into betting on college football and your first time with one of this series of podcasts, you can bet the spread, you can bet the money line, you can bet the total. There are other ways, but those are the three big ones. The spread, when you look at a favorite, that's the team that will have the minus sign next to it. So let's say it's Alabama against Auburn, Alabama -2.5, which means that Alabama is favored by 2.5 points. You take its score, subtract 2.5, and that basically becomes the betting number in mind. It also means, let's say, you take Alabama -2.5, that means Alabama has to win by 3 for you to win your bet. If you take Auburn +2.5, then you're looking at it just the other way around. As the underdog, you get the opportunity to lose the game, but maybe win the bet if it falls within that spread. The over-under is the O/U. It'll be a number that is the total score of the game, above or below that, over-under. And the money line is in a game where you have a favorite. It'll be minus money. You lay that much money. Let's say Alabama's a -150 favorite. You lay $150 to win 100. And then as far as maybe Auburn on the other side of that might be a +140. Then you bet 100 to win 140. So those are the ways you can bet it. So those are the basics. So let's jump into the spread and talk about how the public loves favorites, the public loves home teams, and the public, Josh, as you mentioned a moment ago, loves those very recognizable names.
Yeah, Ron, that was a great breakdown there, because you got to have your basics, then you can really move on and branch out and improve your capping skills overall. So, of course, the public wants to bet on the home team. You see these young kids going into a new stadium. You think, you know, it's great to have the crowd cheering for you. If it's a hostile environment, you're going to be more susceptible to making mistakes. So what does the public do? They overvalue home field advantage. Typically, odds makers will award 3 points for home field. It could go up or down based on the arena, the schedule, the attendance, all, you know, stuff like that. But what I like to lean on a lot is one of my favorite systems overall, short road dogs. So this has been kind of what I call a grinder system overall. The public is really overvaluing home field advantage. They also love favorites as well. Makes sense. If you want to bet a game, you want to bet the better team. However, this is all baked into the cake when the odds makers set their line. So this is one system that has been, again, year to year, pretty consistent overall. When you look at short road dogs that are +4 or less, so, you know, +1, +2, +3, 2.5, 3.5, whatever it may be, what we consider a short road dog, they're 54.1% ATS against the spread. So they're covering at a little bit more than 54%, which, again, doesn't seem that great, but very consistent, a lot of systems, and kind of why I like that. And according to BetLab Sports, that stat there, 54.1%. The reason why I really like it makes a lot of sense. It's got a good theory behind it. Public loves home teams. Public loves favorites. When they see a favorite, -1, -2, -3, -4, they say, of course they can win by that amount. Win by a touchdown or less, boom, I'll take that every time. But you got to remember, you know, 3 points home field advantage. Mm-hmm. If the road dog is 4 or less, the books are kind of telling you these are evenly matched teams on a neutral field. So that's kind of a grinder system for me, that +4 or less road dog system you can really look at. And also even money line opportunities there, but taking the points in that situation, good value historically.
In another episode, we talked about when you're looking at an underdog, you're confident that that underdog will win. I mentioned a system that works in basketball that I have found to put some money in my pocket. Bet 70% of what you were intending to bet on that game by taking the points, but hold out 30% to take that money line. So let's say you're taking, let's say, 6 points with an underdog, but you think that team will win. Take the 6 points, but then maybe you're looking at, a +160, I'm just throwing a number out there, and bet 30% of your stake on that, and you could make a nice little payday there. And even if you don't, let's say that team loses, but you're still going to make more money on the first part of it, the 70%, with that spread by taking the points. Does that work in football?
I think it does, Ron. Yeah, sprinkling on the money line is definitely a strategy that a lot of sharp bettors lean on, especially if you have a better number on the game or close to a pick'em type scenario. Another thing is, you know, looking at quarter live betting, you know, when you're betting a dog or a favorite, you also want to be conscious of what the total is for that game, because depending on the total, that can have a big impact, Ron.
And let's talk about that, especially when you're looking at a total that might be very low. You've got a road dog, and let's say, I'll throw out a number, say 48 or less. Let's say the total's, you're looking at a low-scoring game. You're looking at, you know, in the neighborhood of a 24-21 type of thing, or in that, something like that. How do you bet that?
Yeah, I always lean on dogs in general with low totals. This is something you want to keep in mind, because when you're talking game theory and just probabilities, you know, when you're on a dog and you're getting the points, you want a game to be as low scoring as possible, because the fewer amount of points expected to be scored basically levels the playing field, makes it harder for that favorite to cover that number within that smaller margin of victory, depending on how many points. So again, I throw the number four, you know, Ron, you threw 48 out there, anything 50 or less. You got to remember, totals in college are typically higher than the NFL a lot of times.
Right.
So road dogs, low totals, I love that. Another grinder system, that's about 55% against the spread. But then also flip it, Ron. You know, if you want to bet on a favorite, and again, we you know, we have a contrarian mindset, but it doesn't mean favorites never cover. They do. But I always lean on favorites with high totals. So to me, a high total is like 60 or higher. You know, when you have, you know, always think of like Oklahoma or Texas Tech, these teams that score a million points. Anytime you have a favorite, high total 60 or more is great, because flip it, dog low total, high total. Why? Because the more expected points scored, the easier it is and the more likely it is that a favorite will cover that number, especially if you're a big favorite and you're laying, you know, minus 20 or more. You get up to around 55-56% historically since 2005. So remember, lean on dogs low total, that's a good thing. Lean on favorites with a high total, more points, easier for that favorite to cover.
And by the way, if you're wondering why college games have higher scoring than pro games, a couple of reasons. One is you don't have the parity in college football that you do in the pros. Remember, you have that many more teams with the talent then spread out that much farther. The other part of this is that the rules are such that in college football, they stop the clock every time there's a first down. More clock stoppages, more plays, the more opportunity for scoring. So that's part of why it's baked in. All right, so let's talk about some other things that come into play here, like bye weeks. We've talked about this in other sports, teams coming off of a break. How do you look at bye weeks?
Yeah, bye weeks are really important. You know, whenever you're looking ahead that week and the lines come out early, you know, you want to circle those games where teams are coming off a bye, because that's where scheduling can really come into play. That's something you want to incorporate in your capping. So very basic thing, bye week, you know, team has the week off. How does that affect their play? It really benefits favorites overall. So if you are a favorite coming off a bye, especially a home favorite, you're about 55% against the spread historically. If you're a ranked home favorite, you're even better, closer to 60%. So why is that important? Because typically, you know, the better team will perform better off of the bye, because, you know, if you're the favorite in general, you have better players. But really, to me, it's about coaching. You know, when you have a coaching staff that can handle the bye week, better prepare, has extra time to game plan, that's an added advantage for that favorite. And then really the home thing is important, because these are college kids. You know, pros are used to traveling and staying in hotels. They have the routine. They've been doing it for years. These kids, when you travel and go to a new place, that can be a disadvantage if you're not used to it. Or maybe you're a wide-eyed freshman or sophomore and you're just not, you know, in your comfort zone. So off a bye week, that's kind of the one situation where, even though, Ron, I'm a dog better in general, a contrarian, that's where you can take advantage of some favorites off a bye and ranked home favorites off a bye as well.
Speaking of rankings, I want this sticks in my craw. One of my favorite lines that Vinny Malulo, who's from Gone Gaming and who makes numbers at the South Point in Las Vegas, says that the number to the right means far more than the number to the left. And what's he talking about there? Well, the number to the right, of course, is the point spread. The number to the left is the ranking of the team, Associated Press or coaches poll. And what drives me even more bonkers, Josh, is when you see, let's say, I'm just going to throw out an example here. Number 5 LSU is visiting number 7 Georgia. Number 7 Georgia is a 2.5-point favorite. And then number 7 Georgia wins the game and is said to have upset number 5 LSU. No! It was a 2.5-point favorite! Don't look at the number to the left. Look at the number to the right. Okay, off my soapbox now. In terms of the practicality of all this, how do you apply rankings?
You're exactly right, Ron. I think this is what we really want to stress, especially to new bettors, is that don't fall in love with rankings. Don't do...
Amen.
Exactly.
Amen.
Yeah, if you take one thing out of this, it's don't bet based on rankings, because you're really number one. Okay, they'll all be ranked 1 through 25, but a lot of casual bettors will literally just bet the games based on who's the higher ranked team. You know, in theory, it makes sense. They're ranked higher. That means they're better. That means they're more likely to win. But public overvalues that. Oftentimes, you know, there's so much more that goes into it. And you really kind of want to think of it differently. You know, you can get much more value. Again, the odds makers know that the public will, if a number five team plays a number 17, they'll lean to the five team. They'll lean to whoever is ranked higher. So what does that mean? It's baked into the cake. They'll shade that number toward that higher ranked team with public perception in mind. So you actually want to flip it. You want to think in terms of almost buying low on rankings. You want to kind of buy low on the team that is maybe the higher ranked, or I always love unranked versus ranked. That's when you can really take advantage of, you know, a ranked team against an unranked team. The public will say, give me the ranked team all day long. You know, the other team isn't even ranked. They're not even in the top 25. But when you can flip it and instead of leaning on rankings, almost kind of go against them a little bit, buy low, sell high, you know, transition the way you read rankings, that's where you can get much better numbers overall. And then, Ron, I'll just throw one at you. This is a grinder system I like. Two ranked teams, basically top five teams, you know, take that ranked team overall. That favorite is actually 55.1%. Two ranked teams take the favorite. You know, usually you'd think, you know, the public will say, give me the points if they're both ranked very well. But kind of leaning that other way can take advantage for bettors as well.
Absolutely. And you talk about ranked teams. They say, and when we say favorite, remember, it's not the ranking that determines the favorite. It's the point spread, especially in these teams that are barely in the top 25. They come and go like it's a revolving door. And that's the other thing you have to look at. But in terms of power rankings, the gamblers have, bookmakers even have them too. Those are much more steady as you look at them. Okay, so teams that are bad against the spread and teams that are good against the spread, this is where you look at it and say, okay, what makes sense and what does not?
Exactly, Ron. And this is important too, because you also get into the habit of, you know, public betting. And again, college, very public, college football, very public sport overall. But you'll always get the, you know, the one loss record of these teams. Once you get into betting every day and every week, you'll then have another record, the ATS record, how many times they've covered, how many times they have failed to cover. You'll start to see, as we get deeper into the season, the public will just bet the teams that cover a lot, which makes sense. However, you actually can buy low and go the other way. And I always like betting bad ATS teams against good ATS teams. Doesn't make sense up front. But basically what that means is, you know, a team that hasn't covered a lot is very undervalued overall, and you're getting better numbers. A team that has covered a lot, basically they become overvalued, and these lines are further shaded toward those good ATS teams. So the public will just keep betting whoever covers for them, but those teams become more and more overvalued, and that's actually a better buy low opportunity to bet bad ATS teams, a team that's 5-10 ATS against a team that's 10-5 ATS, because you're getting a better number overall with that public bias in mind.
Give me a quick snapshot on televised games.
Quick snapshot is televised games lean contrarian, because if they're on TV, it means that the public is flocking to these games, especially like prime time, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. They're going to attract a ton of bets, a ton of public action. What does that mean? Most often you're going to have the public really leaning toward that favorite or that home team. So that's when you can kind of go the other way in these heavily bet televised games. To bet against the public. Bet against those drunk guys at the bar, Ron.
Okay. All right. Totals. Let's get into totals. The over-unders. The number of points that will be scored in the game, will it be over or under the total that is shown to you when you are betting on that game? Give me some snapshots, if you could, Josh, of your own algorithms on totals.
Yeah, so some basic totals, obviously, second most heavily bet type after the spread. But number one, I always look at conference, non-conference. Is it a conference game or a non-conference game? Are they in the same conference, the opponents, or different? I always lean a little bit more to unders in conference games. You know, the reason for that is these teams have a lot of familiarity. They play each other every year. There's a big rivalry aspect. So typically, you're a little bit higher, around 52% to the under. In conference games versus non-conference, lack of familiarity benefits the offense. You're on 49%. So slight edge unders in conference games. But I really love betting, and you know me, Ron, I love betting based on weather and factors like that. I think there's a ton of value. So if you like overs, target heavily, target really hot games, 85 degrees or higher. The over is about 55% historically. Why? Because the defense is just gassed out there. The offense is humming, and they're they know what they're doing. They're, you know, they're running their plays. The defense has to react. So especially early September, a lot of southern states where it's really, really hot, 85 degrees or more, those overs tend to do very well. But then flip it, Ron. We love windy unders. You talk about it all the time. Yeah. If it's windy, you know, I say really don't pay attention until it's 10 miles an hour or more. When you get to 15 or even 20, cashing the unders does very well. You're close to 60% overall, because when it's windy, it's harder to throw the ball, move the chains, score points. You'll have missed kicks. And as a result, you'll run the ball more and chew up the clock. So always look out for windy unders. If you can jump on those numbers early, great opportunity to take an under in a windy game.
What about short weeks?
Short weeks are very important, especially Thursday nights. When you look at a Thursday night game, you have a lot of value to the under as well, around 56%. Because usually short week, what do the coaches do? They dumb down the game plan. They make it simple. They make it easy. You don't want to, you know, give too much to your kids in a short week. So unders historically do well. And then also, if you're betting totals, look at teams that run the ball a lot. You know, in college, you run it more than you throw it, typically, unless you're, you know, an air raid offense. But teams that run it more, and I would say, you know, average more than 200 yards a game on the ground, you're looking at a pretty decent edge here to the under. And then always keep an eye out for those military academy teams, Navy, Army, Air Force. They throw it almost every single time, Ron. And that's when you chew up the clock and you really can lean on unders.
You mean they run it every single time?
Yeah, sorry. They run it every single time. And, you know, the option or whatever, but those are just long, long, long drives and chew up the clock and low-scoring games typically with Navy, Army, and Air Force.
It's so odd that Air Force runs, but that's another story altogether. Okay, reverse line movement. This is where you start to follow what the pros are doing when they're betting.
Yeah, when you're betting college football, lean on learning line movement, seeing where a line opens, how it develops. But again, we make it pretty simple. You know, reverse line movement to me is an easy indicator of sharp action. It's when the betting line moves in a direction that makes no sense, but there's a reason for it. There's a reason why the odds maker is moving the line. If you see an underdog where the public is all over the favorite, but the line moves to the dog, maybe they open +7, they're down to +6, even though everyone is betting against them. What does that tell you? Sharps hit the dog, getting the points at, and hopefully you can get the 7 there. Then you have fade the trendy dog situations where, you know, public loves the dog getting the points, but the line moves further to the favorite. That will be an indication of sharp money as well. And then my all-time favorite, Ron, is just looking at totals that drop. Typically, the public is always going to lean on these overs, wanting to see high-scoring games. So if you start to see that total fall, you know, 60.5 down to 59 to 58, if you can jump on it early, just always train your brain. If a line doesn't make any sense at all, there's a reason behind it, and that's something you want to be aware of going in.
What are some of the other tips you might have, especially with regard to bargain hunting and maybe what you're following in terms of developments ahead of the game?
Yeah, so biggest thing overall, we can't stress this enough, in terms of all sports, but especially in college, because there's so many teams, because there's so many games, you got to set yourself up beforehand with multiple outs and being able to shop for the best line, because these numbers can vary. They can move very quickly. So you want to make sure that you're betting and you have access to, you know, 5 different sports books, 5 or more. You know, that way you can shop for the best line. Also look at late movement, you know, game day movement, that last hour, that last half hour after limits have been raised is also very, very meaningful. And of course, Ron, you know it's important to be on Twitter, because why? Tracking injuries, suspensions, you know, getting those local beat reporters. It may not be on ESPN that the quarterback got sick from, you know, App State, but because you were able to, you know, look online and get these little pieces of information, things can slip through the crack. And the more time you put into studying each team and tracking each team, you can get some really insightful information there.
Isn't that the truth? And by the way, if you focus on maybe one of the mid-major conferences that's still in the FBS, you do so maybe more so than the national media are, you might find yourself in an advantageous situation, because your knowledge is going to be better than that of the average Joe better out there. So there's something to be considered as well as you're attacking all this. All right, so we've given you a lot to digest so far. Oh, yeah, there's one more wrinkle to college football. Oh, is it ever a wrinkle? And it's at the end of the season, bowl games, and how confounding it can be to bet those. We'll talk about that here on the Everything Guide. Ron Flatter, Josh Applebaum on the Everything Guide to Sports Betting VSiN podcast. So we've taken you through the regular season, although what we just talked about can also apply to what we're about to discuss. Bowl games, the postseason, of course, that also means the playoffs and the national championship game. But particularly all these bowl games, it almost seems, Josh, like there are more bowl games than there are college football teams. Well, all right, maybe that's just a skosh of an exaggeration. But betting bowl games can be very tricky.
No, you're totally right, Ron. Yeah, and it's basically, what are bowl games? They're these like mini Super Bowls, and at the end of the year, they're your playoff games, and you know they have crazy, wacky names: the Poinsettia, Goodyear, Everything Bowl, or you know you have these crazy names overall. But the point is that they're super fun to bet on, and they're also a very unique time of year where if you have a contrarian mindset, you can really, really stack and pad your bankroll and make a lot of money. So, number one, bowl games. Why is it important? It's the best time to go contrarian because really, number one, you'll get these breakdowns of the scheduling of the bowl games weeks and weeks in advance. And also, you know, instead of a college football Saturday with, you know, 60, 70 games across the board, you're getting one or maybe two bowl games a night. And then, you know, some days you might have three or four, but basically because these bowl games are scheduled out weeks and weeks in advance, they have more time for bets to build up. You have an influx of recreational money hitting the market. And really, it's kind of like March Madness in college basketball. You have bettors who may not have bet all season long, but it's in December, it's around the holidays, you know, maybe you're having a beverage, you're chilling with your family or want to get away from your family. So you may not know college football, but you're going to bet on these bowl games. And that's when the public really, really shows up, leans on these popular teams, these favorites. And that's also, they're all nationally televised games, ESPN, primetime games. So the ticket counts skyrocket much more than an average college football game. And as a result, betting on a lot of dogs is profitable. The dogs bark loudest overall. They're around 52-53%, whereas they're more of a coin flip during the regular season. But I like inflated bulldogs, Ron. You know, me and you are going to start a band. We'll be the inflated bulldogs. But if that game moves further, or that line moves further toward that favorite, and the public's moving the number, let's say a dog in a bowl game opens at plus six, public's hitting the favorite, that plus six goes to plus 6.5 or plus 7 or more, or almost 60% historically against the number since 2005. So get taking advantage of public bias, best time of year to do it during the bowl game season.
The inflated bowl dogs. You'll see our flyers plastered on brick walls all over bad parts of town. Well, this is something I've always wanted to know how to quantify when it comes to bowl games, Josh, and that's motivation. You get a big-name school that lost to its rival late in the season, and that cost it a chance to go on, say, to the college football playoff, and now it's stuck in some bowl game that's in late December against perhaps a mid-major or a team that's percolating, that's on the rise, that might have a coach of the year candidate because he took a team that was 1-11 the year before and scratched them into a bowl game at 7-4. Well, I look at motivation. That team that scratched its way in against the team that disappointed itself by failing to get into a bigger game, I like the scrappy team in that case, don't you?
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, Ron. Yeah, we know, okay, bowl dogs do well because the public is, you know, massive influx of public betting, but motivation is another really, really key factor overall. You know, if you have a team, a perennial bowl game team that, you know, they thought they'd be in the playoff and now they're playing some bowl, you know, who cares? They're not as motivated versus a team that's, you know, like scrappy and got in there. You love banking on motivation, a team that's maybe outperformed or coming into the bowl game season and did well their last few games to get in. Maybe they're right. They're even all year, and then they played late and played well and got in. That's really important. And then I'll throw a couple more at you, Ron. Also, this is a time where looking at coaching staff, some coaches get fired. You know, do they have their staff? Is there an interim coach coaching that bowl game? Typically, those are situations to bet against. Also, look at the star players in these games. If they're a high draft pick possible player, they may sit out because they don't want to get injured, hurt their draft stock. So, you know, teams that have a lot of star players who don't play, that's another thing to keep in mind overall. But yeah, dogs, motivation, you know, betting against staffs where you have an interim coach and the coach got fired, looking at, you know, possible draft picks who are out, kind of fade that as well. These are all really, really important factors to keep in mind during bowl game season.
I also look, too, at teams like those up-and-coming teams, particularly those with a lot of sophomores and juniors who are going to be juniors and seniors the following year, that the bowl game almost becomes the first game of the ensuing season, and that also adds to motivation, versus a team that might be senior-laden and, like you said, might have already had a bunch of guys say, that's it for me, I'm getting ready for the draft, won't be playing in this game on December 29th.
That's key. And we also got to mention, Ron, you know, there are other ways. Obviously, we want to make sure everyone goes to VSiN.com and at VSiN Live on Twitter. But, you know, we hit on a lot today, Ron, but we also got to mention there are other ways to bet college football. Live lining has become really, really popular. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you remember you can do your first half bet, your second half bet. There are a lot of futures you can take advantage of as well. Who will win the Heisman Trophy? That gets a lot of action throughout the year. These odds will change, obviously, going into the year, looking at win totals, looking at juice movement, liability, returning starters, stability, stuff like that. A lot of futures to make the playoff. Also another you know, bet that gets a lot of action overall. And then also, Ron, I always love those draft props. You know, who will be the number one pick? I think if you can hit that just right, and I got lucky last year because I hit Burrow at, you know, I think he was like minus 150 before he kind of blew up. But those are all available to you. So hopefully you learned some spread systems, some totals, some different situations to lean on overall. But remember, there's tons of ways to bet college football. Just make sure you're making a bet with your head, not your heart. A data-driven bet, a smart bet overall, but definitely go to VSiN.com to learn more.
And stay on top of changing trends, too. When you were mentioning Heisman Trophy winners, Josh, it used to be that Heisman winners in bowl games stunk. But that trend has been changing, at least in the years before we were recording this show. So maybe by the time you hear this, make sure that that trend is still in case. And don't just rely on your dad or your grandpa and what he said still continuing to be what's going on now, because it is ever-changing. And so staying on top of it is as much a challenge as well. We hopefully kept you on top of at least some of the basics on how to bet college football. He's Josh Applebaum. I'm Ron Flatter. This is the Everything Guide to Sports Betting VSiN Podcast.